Hi, this is Gavin Robertson at Niagara College Teaching Winery in Niagara-on-the-Lake, Ontario, Canada, and you're listening to Cider Chat.
Episode 140. Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Rhea Windcaller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. And this week, we are up north in Ontario, specifically Niagara-on-the-Lake, and we're going to be getting the lowdown from Gavin Robertson and his work at Niagara College, which is also known as the Canadian Food and Wine Institute. But it's so much more, because they're not only teaching wine, they're teaching cider making too. But I'll let Gavin and I get to that chat with you in just a moment. But in the meanwhile, here's a little news out and about in Ciderville. For all those listeners who get this podcast as soon as it goes live on Wednesday, then this is especially for you. Well, I should say especially if you live in Northern California region of Sonoma. A big hot spot for cider has been kind of coming up for a while now. There is one cidery in particular. Well, there's a lot of cideries, actually. But one cidery in particular that I really adore because they have helped support Cider Chat, and that's Ethics Cider. So I'd like to share with you this new event that's coming up this year, happening tomorrow on Thursday, August 9th. So there's still time to get tickets if you're lucky. And it's called the Backyard Cider Salon. And what's going to happen is going to take place at the Handline Restaurant, which is based in Sebastopol, California. So just to give you a visual, say you don't get there this year, but you want to go next year, because it will happen every year, of course. That's a little north of San Francisco. So you could like fly into Oakland, you could fly into San Jose, go to the cider bar in San Jose called Cider Junction, or head into the San Francisco airport, and then just zoom up to Sonoma County. You will not regret it as far as cider is concerned. So anyways, getting back to this event, it's going to take place on the 9th from 4 to 7, and it's a cider and food pairing, and you're going to have some cider from Ethics Ciders, who we adore here in Ciderville, Horse and Plow, Preston Farms, I Cider, and Golden State Cider. They're going to be all pouring their latest local cider releases, and Handline, the restaurant, will be pairing some of their delectable, they say, food bites with these ciders. And the best part is net proceeds of the event go to support the North Bay Just and Resilient Future Fund. So that's all farmer-based, good people at Ethics Cider. I've met the owners of Golden State Cider. Haven't had all those folks on the podcast yet, but you know, I do adore California. I adore everywhere out there in Ciderville. I just want to let you know that's happening. If you want to find out a little bit more about the Sonoma Cider Week, then you could go to the show notes. I'll give you a direct link where you could find out what's taking place today. It's going to go now through Saturday. Ciderville, can you feel the pace going on out there in the orchards right now? You're starting to see these posts coming out from Ciderville like it has begun, and somebody will have like a bushel of apples, some like early spring apples. Yes, it has begun. And wow, if you listened to last week's episode, which was with Peckham's Cider from New Zealand, the top of the South Island in New Zealand, if you don't know what I'm talking about, you got to listen to that episode. That was 139 with Alex Peckham. He let us know what was happening in the Southern Hemisphere in terms of orchard care and cider making. It really was informative. I've been waiting to find out and speak more present day. So in the Southern Hemisphere right now, they are pruning their apple trees and getting ready for that stage, because soon it's going to be apple blossom season there, which is just you turned your heads around, right? But where we are getting ready for the apple harvest, and some people are already harvesting apples in the Northern Hemisphere. And that means when we land in Normandy, France, coming up, oh my goodness, like next week, is that true? Let me see. I'm looking at the calendar. Next week, it will be, for me, a month exactly before I arrive in Europe to be getting ready for the tour and to be welcoming people. Oh, whoa. I got to get going here. Stuff to do. But I'm actually feeling pretty chill about it because I just got a little welcome gift for people. So I would say what that is, but I know that you're listening and I want you to be surprised when you land in Paris. It is cider related. Yeah, that's all I'm going to say, but I'm just having a ton of fun with that, preparing to welcome everybody, getting some extra hotel rooms for those who are arriving early. Watch out, France. Here we come. There's going to be a cider tour in town. Yeah, that's crazy. Oh my gosh, it's so crazy. Can't wait. So I should say, because I'm kind of like a little frenetic here right now, is that you should know that, yes, you could contact me if you want to go. And there's probably a good chance I might be able to squeeze a couple more people in the best way possible. It's like a loving squeeze. It's like a fluffernutter kind of squeeze. So no worries there. But I am totally closing it August 14th, and this is a solid date. And then it's going to be only waiting list. So if something happens, that's it. And I will say, I mentioned that last week, and I've already heard from people. Soon we're going to be in France and talking about that harvest, biting into the palms in real time in France. That's going to, I just want to like think about that for a minute. I'm not that juice, about that juice experience and be able to actually taste the tannins, to smell the fruit, to see what it looks like, to feel it in your hand. It's got me going. So lots happening. I am in like supersonic pace right now. So stay with me, Ciderville. When we come back, we're going to go to this chat with Gavin Robertson, and we're going to fill you in on what's happening at this college / cider making scene and how it's just kind of taking off there and talking about Ontario. So stay tuned. We'll be right back with all of that. This chat was recorded in June while I was on a cider tour with Ryan Monkman of Fieldbird Cider. If you're a regular listener, you know that I've been rolling out these chats from Ontario, Canada. Ryan sponsored me to come on up and do this meetup with all the makers, and he really did an amazing thing for Canadian cider overall to give it the opportunity to get online like this with the podcast. And one of the first stops we did on the tour, when I first met Ryan, he brought me to Niagara College to meet Gavin. And we went down in the back way. We kind of went down a dirt path. And Ryan said, hey, you're in the trade, so we could take the back door. And we did, man. We went right into that back door where all the tanks were, the big stainless steel. There was like a barrel section in the back. And then sat down in the lab area at a big stainless steel table. And you'll hear a little fan action that we turned on and off, and we just chit-chatted. It was really fascinating for me because there are, well, Canada is a huge country. Let's begin with that. I mean, it is huge. I mean, it goes coast to coast, just like the United States. Not as many people, but this area is renowned for wine. And if you go up to Prince Edward County, and I think it happens in this section too, in the winter they have to bury the grape vines, which that's like burying a fig tree. Can you imagine like having a couple of hectares or acres of grape vines and then having to bury them and then unbury them every year? Wow. Well, it's also at the same time really known for apples. And the pace is starting to pick up in this region. And that's a bit what we're talking about with Gavin. I think his heart is really into wine, is my sense. But the school is really going forward with cider. And he's part of that too. He has a virtual cidery. He's going to be telling you a bit about that and how they're meeting that demand for people who really want to learn cider making in Canada. So without further ado, let's all grab a glass and join this chat with both Ryan Monkman, who is sitting there at the table with Gavin Robertson of Niagara College at Niagara on the Lake in Ontario, Canada. We're sitting in kind of like the belly of this like little school here, right? This is the ground floor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is, I mean, what's the dimensions of this?
Well, so we're on the Niagara on the Lake campus of Niagara College. Mm-hmm. And there's another campus up in Welland, Ontario. But this campus is devoted in a big way to food and beverage sciences. So we have a big culinary program, chefing, pastry making, etc. We have a sort of a food science, food technology research and innovation department. We have a brewmaster program, soon to be artisanal distillation program. A enology, sort of winery and viticulture technician program, as well as a postgrad wine business management program. And actually in September we also have, as part of our horticulture school, a cannabis growing program, given that the legislation's changing towards allowing not just medical but recreational marijuana.
When is that supposed
country.
To change in Canada in terms of recreation?
Very soon.
Very soon.
Canada Day,
isn't
it? Yeah.
Beginning of July.
Beginning of July, yeah, because that's a kind of a hot topic for sales down in, mm-hmm. in the U.S. They're kind of documenting.
Yeah, everyone's worried about it cutting into beverage sales.
Yeah, I guess we're getting some data on that.
Yeah, I guess, out of Washington and Colorado. So so the wine program has been around since the year 2000 and was a direct response to growth in the Ontario wine industry, so specifically the sort of fine wine grape industry. As of the 70s and into the 80s, some producers, often sort of European, Northern European, Germans and Austrians, had started planting Vitis vinifera, you know, the good European grape stock, and mm-hmm. started playing with ways to get them through the winter mm-hmm. and to come up with a style of wine that people were willing to drink. And in the 90s, 2000s, it really exploded, and you know, we have a couple hundred wineries in the province, and about 18,000 acres under vine at this point.
18,000 acres,
yeah,
wow.
Of wine grapes specifically. A small amount of that is still table grapes, but the vast majority of it is for wine at this point. So quite a healthy industry. So this program, or the programs we offer at the college, support that industry.
Hmm. Is there, you know, a lot of time a region has a particular wine that is like this, well, we would say in the brew business, like flagship or cider, the flagship. Is there a flagship kind of grape?
The grapes that I think it's pretty agreed upon that do well would include Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, done in a fairly cool climate style, so mm-hmm. less Napa, California, and more Burgundy, but maybe somewhere mm-hmm. in between because our summers can be fairly warm. Mm-hmm. Some really good Riesling, particularly from some of the limestone-based soils on the other side of St. Catharines. Sparkling wine is a new category, given we can ripen it comfortably every day. So there's more and more expertise, I think, in making both traditional method bubbles and, to some extent, tank Charmat fermented. Cabernet Franc of the Bordeaux grapes, although there's a fair bit of Merlot and Cab Sauvignon in the ground, Cabernet Franc seems to be one that does quite well in our growing season. Creates sort of a medium-bodied red that's kind of savory and spicy and really attractive, and is pretty unique from kind of the French predecessor, pretty unique from anything else you taste. So those would be the major styles.
Now we're in St. Catharines, which is like a stone's throw from Niagara Falls.
Yeah.
is...
This is sort of technically Niagara-on-the-Lake.
Niagara,
so this
okay.
is almost where the three meet.
Oh, all right.
Yes.
Yeah, right. We went over a bridge, I think, so Niagara-on-the-Lake.
And the logic to this Niagara Peninsula is that we're to the south of Lake Ontario. So in winter, when Canada gets pretty cold weather, even in this most southern part, latitudinally, we're actually fairly... you know, reasonably temperate at 43 degrees, but we still do get sort of continental influences.
Are you talking Fahrenheit?
Latitude.
Latitude. Oh, yeah. 42 degrees latitude.
Yeah, 43
okay.
or so.
Okay.
So, you know, that puts us on par with lots of growing areas in Spain, but we get the weather patterns in winter are towards big polar air movements that come across here, so we get cold. And that would be the limiting factor in growing Vitis vinifera, for sure. Mm. Less so apples, of course.
Right. And this area spans out along the lake here. It's not just around Niagara-on-the-Lake, but from what I'm guessing, it's going all the way up to like Prince Edward County.
Well,
and does the college cover that area?
Sort of.
okay.
So the major plantings are all in the Niagara Peninsula, ending about Grimsby, and that's very specifically because Lake Ontario is to the north of us. So in winter, when those sort of cold air movements come from the north, they warm up over the open water.
Mm-hmm.
Prince Edward County has really interesting soils, is a much shorter growing season, and is much colder. So they're doing different styles of wine there, and there's less bulk production, there's less commercial production because it's more challenging to
when
grow.
When you say
grapes.
Commercial, so is it more boutique up there?
Inevitably smaller.
Smaller.
Yeah,
okay.
There are very few commercial growers because it's hard to ripen. There are more variable vintages, and it's hard to crop high.
Okay.
Whereas Niagara just has more diversity. You can grow more different types of grapes. You can ripen more different types of grapes. You can make more different styles.
Mm-hmm.
But the county that's going for it is really unique, sort of heavy limestone-based soils that tend to show up in their sort of distinctive Chardonnays and Pinots in particular.
And ice cream.
And ice cream. ice cream. You got to get those famous notes in there,
that's
which
right.
I'm preparing myself for.
Yeah.
So, is this the only school of its kind in Ontario?
So,
there are three/four
now options in terms of accredited institutions.
Okay.
So, that would be within the university or college systems.
Awesome.
So, Brock University has an undergraduate program.
Mm-hmm.
They offer a short, like, 8-month certificate or 1-year certificate to specialize in enology and viticulture for people who already have a science degree.
Mm-hmm.
And they also offer graduate work. And there's a few researchers working at a Brock, so that's in St. Catharines. And then Okanagan College just started a 2-year accredited diploma program, so more like the college. Which would be more of a hands-on applied technical diploma.
Yeah.
And I think Nova Scotia Community College has some sort of offering. I don't think it's a full diploma at this point, but some sort of certificate.
So when I asked you that question, I thought I was just talking about Ontario, but if you're jumping over to Nova Scotia, are you talking about, like, that's it for all the schools in all of Canada? Wow, okay.
Yeah,
so really centered here in Ontario.
South of the border.
Because I know there is, like, you know, wine and certainly cider happening out in the British Columbia region.
Yeah, yeah.
But this is it. So folks coming to this school would be primarily Canadians, or are you...
Primarily, although, we have several international. We're seeing lots of South Asian and Asian students every year because those are expanding markets, so both in terms of production and consumption. Our wine business management program in particular has a lot of international students because the wine business is global.
Mm-hmm.
We see a few Americans here and there, although there's no shortage of schools down there. So,
this is a pretty neat spot here with everything
from
happening.
The Finger Lakes, we've had, I can think of at least two sort of family wineries who've sent the kids here for education because it's close. You're in sort of an interesting building on campus in that it is a fully functioning, commercially licensed winery like any other in Ontario, producing about 5,000 cases of wine a year and some cider now in addition, on 33 or so acres of grapes. And the property also has a couple acres of hops in support of our brewing program and a commercial brewery that's on campus as well. And more recently, just a small little high-density cider orchard that we just put in this spring. So we run as a fully functioning commercial model and also use the space as a classroom in support of the various
experiential
programs. Exactly. Right. So we involve the students in our commercial operations wherever possible. We'll assign them their own row of grapevines to prune and take through. We, in September, in harvest, we're hand harvesting with them and conducting pressing comparison experiments. They have their own pilot scale fermenters in the one part of the winery. They have their own lab and workspace in the winery. So it's sort of this shared space. So we're making wine to sell to, that basically goes back into the program and into the facilities.
Got it.
Yeah.
And how long is the typical program? There's probably a couple different levels.
It's five terms, including work term, which is basically from September to December. So they go off and do a harvest, and then they come back to us for a final term.
So like 2.5 years then?
About 2 years.
2 years?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how long have you been working here?
So I took the program in 2009, graduated in 2011, and I did my co-op placement here, and I've worked sort of on and off, you know, more or less full time ever since, with a few breaks to travel and make wine elsewhere.
How did you get into this, Gavin? What was your interest? Were you like a wine drinker at an early age or your family?
Wine drinker, and I traveled in Europe and picked a few grapes and was sort of generally familiar and liked it. But I was living in Toronto and took a bike ride out along Lakeshore. Just for the week, I just had a few days off. And I was like, you know, generally familiar with the notion of Ontario wine, but didn't really realize till I got out here and started biking around Niagara Lake, just how significant an industry it was. Mm. And saw the vineyards and talked to a few people in the area and was pretty interested with it as a career possibility.
What I
liked about it, I guess, I was looking to get into a career that was maybe a little more hands-on than what I had been doing. And what I think kept me was the seasonality of it, that the jobs were the shifts with the seasons, that middle of winter you're doing one thing, and middle of summer it's completely different in a lot of ways. And what kept me here is that it's this really dynamic, sort of interesting environment, and that I'm making wine like I would be at any other small winery. But it's also, you know, full of students and research projects, and we have a sort of interesting, unique role to play in the industry, I think.
Especially right now with what's going on with cider. You mentioned that there's this growing interest, and you have a block of cider apples. I mean, how big of a...
Small. I think it's 0.3 or 0.4 of an acre. So we had some drained, irrigated land beside the hop yard, and we thought you know, we've been getting a lot of requests from students just about how to make cider, because it wasn't built into the wine curriculum. But you can make cider under the same license as grape wine. And so many of the existing grape wine facilities in Ontario are in the cider game now. And it makes a lot of sense commercially, because in that really busy summer cider season, your tanks are often pretty empty because you've bottled up for spring. And so from a product flow, sort of commercial perspective, it makes a lot of sense. And so we realized pretty quickly at the school that it was an important aspect of what we should be teaching, just as we kind of got into making sparkling wine, to demonstrate to the students the technicalities of it, because the Ontario wine industry was making more sparkling wine. We decided we had to be making cider and other sort of cider-based fruit beverages, I guess. We have bees on campus as well. We have an 8-month apiculture sort of certificate, beekeeping certificate.
Wow.
And so I've been making a little bit of mead with our campus honey and doing some cider blends with that as well. We try to use fruit and botanicals from our horticulture programs, from our gardens and greenhouses, in some of these sort of single lot ciders that we make. So it's a neat sort of collaborative thing.
Wow, what a think tank scene you have here.
Yeah, it's fun.
It's like the kind of like the job that everybody would just love to be in because it's so diverse.
Sure.
You get all these different, probably people coming in, the professors and folks teaching are from all different venues.
Yeah, people have come from the restaurant industry in different places, lots of different influence, but everybody sort of has this appreciation, I think, for for, you know, not just the products, but for the craft, which is what's really great about sort of existing on this campus.
When I think about Canada, one of the first thing always comes to mind in terms of cider is ice cider, because I look at Quebec as the birthplace of ice cider in the world in that way, as a real specific technique.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're in Ontario, and you haven't really mentioned ice cider, but is that...
I haven't made one, although probably I will this winter. You know, at this point, so Quebec just in general, I think, you know, is quite progressive and also traditional in their cider making, having inherited a certain kind of northern French sort of thing, just inevitably. Ontario has just been less serious about cider in general for, you know, or it's just more new to the game, I think.
Sure.
There are Ontario ice ciders, no question, but there's such a market for either kind of New World pub style ciders anyways, that probably fly out the door a lot faster and out of tap handles at pubs a lot faster.
Sure.
If you're one of the kind of medium to larger size producers, and even kind of the big commercial giants like Artero, you know, Vincor, Constellation type people with the growers and stuff.
Mm.
You know, the Molsons of the world certainly have cider products on tap as well. But even if you're kind of medium sized, you can flip, you know, apple juice pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Ice cider would be more specialty.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, in the same way that ice wine, dessert wines in general, sugar, as much as people still eat lots of sugar, they don't like to admit it. So I just don't know that there'd be, you know, the same market for...
Not yet.
Yeah.
And my understanding was Molson's that really kind of put a really crimp, you know, on production of cider in this country.
Yeah.
And that there were, you know, kind of like written into the laws that was really blocking cider's growth.
That's quite... I don't know the history of the legislation. Certainly all those big producers have their cider brands now, because offshore brands like Somersby, you know, these kind of El Copapi commercial cider, our apple-based things, can't really call them ciders, are so popular. So there's a lot of controversy right now in sort of truth and labeling and the craft cider associations in the various provinces looking to make it more clear to the consumer when we're dealing with locally grown apples and true apple-based products versus water and sugar and citric acid and some apple flavor.
In the U.S., we have the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Trade, with TTB, which oversees it. What oversees...
Alcohol and Gaming Commission of Ontario would give you your license, and beyond that, it's really CFIA regulations. So in the grape industry, the Canadian Food Inspection Agency.
Okay. Thank you.
At this point, as in sort of European wine regions, Ontario, British Columbia, both have the Vintners Quality Alliance, which is a kind of quasi-governmental regulatory agency for producing 100% Ontario, British Columbia content wines. And so if you see the VQA logo or the words VQA Ontario, VQA Niagara-on-the-Lake, some regional designation, you're guaranteed that everything that in that bottle was grown in that that province or that smaller appellation, that smaller designation, and also that the wine conformed to some basic standards of quality and truth in labeling. And so the wines pass through a tasting panel, a chemical analysis panel, and a label review. And so that's really important in terms of consumer protection and maintaining and sort of enhancing quality. At this point, the Ontario Craft Cider Association is looking to get into something like that, but it's a process. This started in grape wine in the 80s and 90s, And don't quote me on this, but we can look it up after, but Nicuente, I think, was 90 or 91. So it's been around for long enough, and it's a constantly sort of evolving set of regulations that are made in collaboration with the industry. So say a new like skin contact white wine category is coming into vogue, then we'll get a bunch of heads together from the industry, both front of house, back of house production, wine writers, and be like, okay, what is the style? How do you define this? And how do you communicate to the consumer that what they're drinking is going to be like something? And how do you make sure that it kind of tastes good? So it's not a guarantee that it's like excellent quality, but it's a minimum standard, and it broadcasts sort of to the consumer that it is what it is, which is really important in any sort of fine wine region, I think.
Now, this is the wine region of Ontario. How broadly is it exported? And what, here I am kind of living right over the border. I'm not too far away from Canada and relatively, in the U.S. And I didn't know anything about this. I mean, I think it's kind of myopic type of view, but I feel like shouting it from the mountaintops is like, holy smokes, like people don't realize.
So there's lots of,
it creeps up in little spots.
There's lots of
but.
Practical and sort of trade barrier reasons for that. It's just expensive to export. It's state by state. It can be tricky to get your wine out. And as soon as you start moving it like that, people start taking a piece off your profitability. The kind of good news, bad news thing in Ontario right now is, if anything, our biggest problem is there aren't enough grapes. Sales are very good. Domestic sales are good. Exports are as good as they've ever been. Exports tend to be a pretty specific business model for producers here, because the majority are fairly small. Like even our medium-sized wineries are tiny relative to like, your average California winery or Australian winery. There's five or so large players who all have export programs. There's some medium-sized players who would have their specific export models, and in particular for the ice wines, for the dessert wines, and in particular to Asia, because there are big markets for those wines. So not to say that there's smaller producers don't export, they absolutely do. You can find some of our boutique like premium wines on Manhattan wine lists and London wine lists. It's just there isn't that much being made, right? But just in terms of acreage, we're like a tiny appellation in a fairly small appellation of the Loire Valley, right? We're not big at this point. And similar to British Columbia, there just aren't that many grapes. And the domestic market's healthy, so there's not a lot left really to bother pushing hard to sell and paying for a sales agent and all that stuff.
Right. So is there, like when there's not enough apples, more trees are being planted. So is that the same thing with the grapes here?
Yeah. And apples, it's a big problem right now too. Not nearly enough apples. There used to be, I think, closer to 40,000 acres in the province. I think there's only 14,000 or 15,000 right now.
Because?
Because the market bottomed out for baking and eating apples and the
was
fresh
that all
market.
Culinary, you're talking
about.
Yeah,
all fresh market stuff.
Because, Red Delicious type of apples?
Yeah, all
okay.
eating apples. Yeah. And so for the cider industry, one of our biggest issues is, yes, lack of apples. Often the industry now is running out sometime in June in most years. And, people are having to shop across provincial borders and occasionally down to Michigan and whatnot. And again, these larger producers who are getting into cider production will only kind of make that worse. But yeah, there are more orchards being planted. So not just a shortage of apples, the other biggest issue is almost none of those are even heritage, let alone cider apples, that most of us are relegated to making cider from dessert apples.
Is that what you're working with your cidery?
Often for our main pub, and then where we can, we're supplementing with crabs. We're trying to source smaller lots from smaller growers for single lot bottlings. But of course, all the craft people are trying to do the same thing. So if you're going to be proactive as a
cider operation, then you really need to be a grower and you need to be controlling your supply. And that's becoming pretty apparent pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. The successful, serious cider people are going to have to plant their own orchards. Mm-hmm. Right now, I don't think there's enough incentive for the professional apple growers to just move into cider apples, because there's no guarantee on premium pricing. There are different pathogens and things that they would have to look into carefully. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of stock, right? Mm-hmm. And certified, especially certified virus-free stock. So it'll be a longer-term process where particularly on the growing side, production isn't going to keep up with demand. So for now, we're relegated to using what we have and chopping over the border occasionally, I think, if necessary. Although usually those would just be the bigger guys late in the season. Mm-hmm. If you sign contracts early, you can get the apples you need. But it's a very young and very, you know, it's this very new thing. So everybody's just trying to figure it out.
It feels young in Ontario, the cider scene. But at the same time, it feels much like the U.S. was hit with prohibition. Mm-hmm. The same thing happened in Canada,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
So a lot of people are making cider, and then it's kind of like getting this start, like this train going up a hill again. Are there feral apple trees in the area, you know, like people going and kind of scrumping and knocking on doors and saying, what do you have back there, like little small backyard things?
Yeah, fewer down here. So Niagara Peninsula isn't so much apple country, although there used to be more because the land's too valuable for grapes. Because you can't grow grapes where it's colder, it's pretty much all grapes, even a lot of the peaches and plums and cherries, the traditional tree fruits that did better here because it was warmer, they've been pulled out for grapes because that's the crop down here. But as soon as you go up over the Niagara Escarpment and it starts getting colder, so even not too far from here to Font Hill, suddenly there's apple orchards again, and there are some older orchards in there. Then some of these farmers are realizing that there is once again a market. You know, a lot of those apples probably went on the ground for a long time, and there is a market. So
how far is that from here?
20 minutes.
20 minutes, 15, okay.
20 minutes.
And so the elevation
So just out back of the winery, you see that hill? As soon as you go up over that hill, it drops 3, 4, 5 degrees centigrade in winter.
Which direction are we talking? East, west?
Back of the vineyard.
Back of the vineyard would be
south.
Okay. Yeah, because it's pretty flat here. And
yes.
It feels a little bit like Kansas, and I expected that coming here.
Where do you drive in from?
Right over Niagara, not over the falls directly, but
So you came down one hill, that's the Niagara Escarpment, and it runs from the New York side all the way up to Georgian Bay, about 800 kilometers. And it's this limestone ridge, and where we are below the limestone ridge and between Lake Ontario, that's kind of the warm growing area for grapes particularly. As soon as you get up over top, you lose a lot of that moderating influence from the water.
Mm-hmm.
So it gets back into apples and field crops and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But the most apples are actually up towards Georgian Bay, Bruce County. That's where a lot of the cideries are and just a lot of the bigger growers are.
Isn't the Georgian Triangle?
Yeah.
Which is kind of a very cool name.
And certainly if you drive those roads, there's lots of
them. A lot of them.
So, you know, it would be about small operations figuring out how to crew up, figure out who owns the land, get picking bins. And I know of at least a couple small operations who have made it their mandate to sort of forage, as you see, in Hudson Valley and whatnot. But I think it's a bit of a nascent thing at this point.
Do you have, I'm going to call it like a homebrew club or a wine clubs, or is there a lot of folks doing that around here who aren't necessarily going for the commercial level? Maybe, you know, probably not any of the
beer,
students coming
for
here.
Sure.
Definitely
and then
beer, okay.
I would say, and then the home wine thing, like, it is a thing, I think, everywhere, although if you live in this area, there's a lot of pretty serious wine professionals, lots of sommeliers, lots of people who work at the winery, so it would be a relatively higher level, I think, of just like sort of wine connoisseur in this very specific area. But cider, you know, maybe less of a thing, but I don't know. I mean, certainly.
So far.
Yeah, exactly. Certainly we get like in the last 3-4 years, I get inquiries all the time being like, hey, where can I get apple juice?
Well, that's
which is brand new.
That's pretty cool. Yeah.
So clearly, and I know personally a couple people who started off brewing beer because that was the traditional homebrew thing, thinking about cider, doing some cider, who have actually gone into commercial operation in the Hamilton area. And the, you know, the neat thing about cider is you're seeing kind of more urban cideries, or at least people like dancing on that notion.
Mm-hmm.
There's still a licensing requirement that if you want to sell retail product, then you have to, it has to be on a farm. There's a, you have to have planted acreage to get that retail license, but you could still have an urban cidery and run it as a brew pub, you know, sort of like beer, or ship straight to licensees. So there are options within.
So I'm trying to understand that. So you could have an urban cidery, but you would get.
But you can't. You could never sell like a 6-pack of cans.
It could only
be on.
You
can't sell direct to customers. You could sell to restaurants, bars, or you could have a restaurant license, bar license, and pull pints.
I see.
But you can't actually sell directly to customers, and that's just the way.
That is pretty limiting. So
prohibition.
So who works on that legislation for you know, upstart cider makers who are like, that's not fair.
So the Ontario Craft Cider Association would be one, the major lobby group representing a certain subset of cideries. Beyond that, I don't know.
And it's a government.
It's provincial.
Right? I mean, Ottawa is the capital, right, of Canada?
Yeah, and Toronto, but the provincial government's based out of Toronto.
Toronto.
Queensport.
Are they getting that there is a growing
slow
market
moving.
In that
so,
way?
So some positive signs have included ability for anyone with winery license to sell product at farmers markets. That was some, previous to that, you could only sell at your single retail store. To licensees or to the LCBO through the provincial distributor. And they added on grocery stores more recently, a certain number of licensed grocery stores, so that didn't exist in the province until, 2 years ago, a year and a half ago. And the ability to basically take your retail license and use it as an off-site thing for farmers markets. So baby steps in some ways relative to more open distribution regulatory systems, but they're listening to some extent. There's been some useful, I think, economic impact studies, particularly on the wine industry. If you look up the Canadian Vintners Association, you can find links, just showing the sort of total economic impact. So from a relatively small farm gate value of fruit, say $3 or $4 million, that balloons pretty quickly when you consider all the tourism it generates and all the B&Bs and restaurants and the 40,000 jobs in the province, etc. So, I think the province can't ignore that.
Now, I haven't, since I've come over the border, surprisingly, I haven't tried to buy any alcohol yet.
Yeah.
We're going to the LCBO.
Okay. But I recall, last time I was cruising through Canada, it was kind of like really regulated, a little bit like our listeners would know, like New Hampshire, you have to go to like a state package store. Is that still true?
Yeah.
Still true. So, and that's true for wine, spirits, beer, and cider.
Yeah. Again, with a little loosening in terms of now you can go into one of every 10 grocery stores and they'll have a section. But generally speaking, it's still true.
And you could, can you get singles, or do you have to, like Pennsylvania, you can only get a case?
You can get
singles. Yeah. Can you go into a bar and take singles?
No.
So it's only at these like state sanctioned
government distribution stores. Liquor Control Board of Ontario.
Right.
Yeah.
Does anybody?
It's province by province. So Alberta, for instance, has public private. So they do have provincial liquor stores, and they also have private licenses. Nova Scotia as well, to a lesser extent.
That's interesting. But, so a little bit of the Wild West there. They've been taking it on, and to the east, a little bit more wild.
Quebec, you can go into corner stores and buy. I don't know if you can buy spirits, but you can buy beer and wine.
Yeah.
So if you live on the border in Ontario, you can't. So you drive across and you can buy beer. And a corner store.
Kind of feels like.
Although
it,
you're not allowed to bring it back.
Right. There's some pretty. In the courts right now, you can follow the journalism. There's some pretty out of date provincial trade barrier rules as well, and so the Supreme Court just ruled in favor. So it's depending on which province to province, you can't even like purchase and cross the border internally with it. So
That's a real deterrent to business, you know.
Unraveling it is, and especially as these industries have grown, and it's like it's a highly competitive wine, cider, beer, whatever world, because you can import anything you want. You know, there's these behemoths like California sort of chomping at the bit to get the product on LCBO shelves. So garage door cider. So this is a virtual. So it's just one partner and I, very modest, very little sort of capital. And it was as much to let both of us play a little bit outside of our main jobs are in wine production and education, of course. And his in wine and beer sales, but we're both just really interested with what's been happening in the cider
scene. Now, when you say virtual, that's something that I think folks in the wine industry would know a little bit more, because that's been going on for a while. But in cider, that's something that you don't hear too much. So what is a virtual model? What are you talking about there?
So we don't have our own bricks and mortar production facility. We're operating under another license in someone else's facility and just basically producing small batch ciders regularly, sort of seasonally, direct to licensee. We're not even packaging at this point. And that's partly to do with the tax structure and partly to do with labor and manpower. And
so is that kegs then that you're saying?
Kegs straight to licensees, mostly in the GTA, the Greater Toronto Area, because we're in a large population belt here.
So you're shipping it out of Niagara on the Lake region all the way up to Toronto?
As far as London, Kitchener-Waterloo, Guelph, Toronto would be our largest markets. We have some local clientele, but just relative to those places. And in a big way, in Ontario, I think your average cider drinker, they may be sort of wine people, and there's certainly lots of crossover in kind of the urban foodie set. But often I think they're a little more like craft beer drinkers, which is to say they're interested in new, novel. So we're targeting, we're not trying to compete for regular taps at sports pubs, because we can never contend with the big companies and the deals they cut and the merchandising and all that stuff. We're working with a pretty select like group of what we would consider like higher end craft oriented bars and restaurants who are interested in sort of whatever new thing we come out with, and it gets rotated through and then we make something else. So we make kind of a base cider for a few people who keep it on tap regularly. Mostly we're doing real seasonal things and one-offs, and we rarely repeat, using wherever possible Ontario ingredients. That's sort of our main mandate. But it's a little, you know, versus I guess our day jobs, which deal with particularly with wine, which does tend to be more vineyard oriented, and I love that about it. It's about place, it's about vintage. The way we found our way through cider was a little bit more playful, more like craft beer, a little more sort of ingredients driven and conceptual, and it's been just sort of a fun outlet alongside, I think, our day-to-day jobs.
Interesting. So would I assume correctly then that you're doing a modern style cider?
We do bone dry, and we do certainly more traditional like indigenous older oak barrel fermented ciders, but the market frankly isn't so much there. People are interested
in Toronto and those markets.
Again, this is
not today, but wait till tomorrow.
This is purely anecdotal, but we got into it sort of assuming that we were going to make more orchard driven bone dry serious ciders. The immediate hiccup is access to that fruit, right? If you don't have, you know, acres of Kingston Blacks to pull from, which you simply don't in Ontario, you can try, but the cider made from Max doesn't taste the same. You can make it as dry as you want. It still isn't good. And so we've been working on blends, varietal blends. We've been working on with aging, yeast contact to plump up the mouth, using both indigenous yeast and playing with different strains from some friends who have their own yeast company out of Guelph. So they're culturing their own yeast stuff that they isolate, like in a Quebec orchard, for instance.
What was that company's name?
Escarpment Labs. And one of the four, I think, they're all microbiologist guys from University of Guelph, all grads. One of them is in our brewmaster or brew science department. So we're playing with technique. We're trying to get in season the best possible apples we can. We're trying to, for the more traditional ciders, to get at least the better of the eating apples, things like russets and spies that have higher natural sugars, acids, occasionally phenolics, tannins, when possible, although there are very few apples in the ground that are true bitters of any sort of cloth. So that was the first thing that we found. And then on top of that, most of the market, they really don't want to pay for it's hard to sell 750ml format, even naturally bottle conditioned. It's hard to sell dry. We're going in very dry in general, but the English scrumpy thing, it doesn't exist for a lot of reasons right now in Ontario. It may at some point, but it's that agricultural side that has to come along. We're doing small, 15 to 20 keg batch sizes often, and we sell it out within a couple weeks. We're always overlapping batches, and when it's gone, it's gone.
So sounds like a good business model for what you have.
Yeah, it's the same thing.
Do you have first dibs on those cider apples out there?
Of course, but for the college, not for my own company. I'm making actually probably much more cider for the college than I am even for Garage Door. It's quite a healthy category. So we sell growlers and cans. So we do package for the college in-house here.
What is that called, that brand that the college
does? Just Niagara College Teaching Cider.
Okay.
Cider 101 is kind of the general SKU. I am doing bottle condition stuff for the college. So my actual larger cider roll is still at the teaching winery, teaching cider. Garage Door is just a small sort of weekend side project.
Sounds like a good one.
If you want to try some of the ciders that we were talking about in this here episode, such as the Niagara College ciders made by the students, and I did try some, the Cider 101 is really good, rock solid, and they have some specialty ciders there, a lovely tasting room. There'll be some links in the show notes. Also links to find Gavin's Garage Door ciders. There's two Toronto bars. One is The Verst in Toronto and Bar Vola. They serve that on tap. Fun stuff happening there. Now that they're going to have that cannabis program, who knows? Maybe Canada will take the lead of doing kind of a cannabis cider. Certainly, we have the hop ciders. Just waiting to see that first cannabis cider that is worth your dime and mine. So, lots of good stuff happening up in Canada. Stay tuned for more episodes. And thank you so much for spending time with us, Gavin. And best wishes to Niagara College. What an amazing operation! Lovely people, fantastic tasting room. And you just stole my heart when I heard that you could barely keep the cider on the shelves because everybody's walking in asking for it. Best of luck to you all. Cider Chat has a Patreon page, and if you haven't heard about Patreon, it is a website that helps content providers like me keep on doing the work we're doing, such as rolling out this weekly podcast. So it's really easy to find. You could Google it. You could go to ciderchat.com and find out how you could support this podcast. And there's different levels of support that you could do. You could join the Patreon page. I haven't had anyone join for a while. You can make a one-time donation. You could become a larger sponsor of this podcast, such as Fieldbird Cider did up in Ontario, to definitely help bring this episode to you this week and all the episodes coming out of Ontario. That is a big way to help. So if you find it in your heart to do that and feel that this podcast is worth your while, and I suspect you do if you listen this far, then do become a supporter of Cider Chat today. Just go to ciderchat.com and you'll see all the different ways that you can help this here podcast. This is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
Going up. Yeehaw!